Perhaps in retribution, the sun will not allow any U.S. public works built on it.
It's kind of warm there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's true. I never really considered that. See, I have all these plans, and they all go to moot, go to pot, go to... No, they don't go to moot. They go to pot, I guess, is the way to say it. Okay, so if the world of movies in 2008 will be remembered as anything, it will be remembered as the summer of the lazy headline. You know how the headline writers of Variety like to bust out things like Hicks, Nicks, Chicks flicks, meaning the latest Reese Witherspoon movie underperformed in rural markets? But the movies this year have been way too easy to riff on. After all, Hulk was a smash. Get Smart outsmarted the Love Guru. And what was the movie that lasted the longest time in theaters? Iron Man. Enter the whackness. Do your best, punsters. It doesn't mean anything. Daniel Holloway is here with his insightfulnessness, his analysisness. Also, he writes movies and reviews. Yeah, do you write some movies? I have probably one in the drawer, right?
I've got, I'm maybe in my head. I've got a 5-minute movie about, I don't know.
The thisness?
The thisness,
the thatness.
Yeah.
He writes reviews for Metro newspapers. He's our guy. Thanks for coming in, Dan.
Thanks for having me.
So we'll get to the whackness in a second. I guess the biggest one opening is Hancock.
Lots of puns there.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Han Solo, and then there's the second syllable.
Yeah.
It turns out Jacob Gans was looking at the charts. He likes to look at his charts and see where Pluto is aligned. But he was looking at the movie charts. And since 1997, almost every other year, July 4th weekend has a huge Will Smith movie. This is a very interesting trend. So it's an odd – well, it's an even year, but I guess – so it's 2006 and 2004. Going back to Independence Day, you know, there was Hitchcock. Hitch. He did Hitch, right?
Yeah.
And they were doing Hancock.
Yeah.
I'm getting confused. So Will Smith has a big movie in movie theaters. Tell us a little bit about Hancock.
Hancock is a it was actually a script that, speaking of puns, had been languishing on desks in Hollywood for, I think, about 20 years under the working title Tonight He Comes.
Oh.
Yeah. So that eventually got changed to Hancock, which it's arguably not an improvement.
No.
It's about a drunken, surly superhero who continues to do his job but has kind of lost the will to really, you know, commune with the people and be nice.
I think most everyone who does a superhero movie that isn't taking a known hero from like Marvel or DC and bring him to life, they like to do that riff on it, which is, what if the superhero had a lot of flaws? So does this movie take the riff anywhere special?
This is kind of, at least in the first 30 minutes, the last word in flawed superheroes. It's probably, the first 30 minutes of the film are the best, and it's because you're used to seeing Will Smith as being the ultimate likable actor. I mean, try to think of something that he's been in since Six Degrees of Separation where he wasn't just the nice, likable guy.
Suave, cool, you identified with him, even in Pursuit of Happiness where he's like real down on his luck. He's plucky. You know, you want to root for Will Smith.
Exactly. The first time we see him here, he's passed out drunk on a park bench and he starts swearing at a child.
Really?
So, yeah. He also swears at old ladies. And again, this is the best part of the film because you get to see a little bit of Will Smith playing with that public persona that he has. And it's something, while it's a natural outgrowth of the idea of the sort of flawed Marvel superhero, you haven't seen it quite taken to this point in a film.
Yeah. Let's play a clip. And in this clip, Hancock, played by Will Smith, is explaining his background to a publicist played by Jason Bateman.
You don't remember anything?
Only thing I had in my pocket was bubblegum, 2 movie tickets, Boris Karloff, Frankenstein, but no ID, nothing. I went to sign out. The nurse asked me for my John Hancock. So I actually thought that's who I was.
How come I didn't hear any of this? I didn't read about it in any newspapers?
It was probably in the papers 80 years ago.
80 years ago?
Oh, I don't age.
All right, so I think we've got, from that 37-second clip, you find out a lot about the movie. That's the plot. He's trying to find out who he is, right?
He doesn't know who he is. And, you know, guess what? In Act 3, we're going to find out who he is.
So you like the first 30 minutes. Does this imply that the rest of it falls down?
I kept thinking of the last Will Smith movie that I saw, which was I Am Legend, where the first 2 acts were really interesting because Smith's character was very isolated and it becomes somewhat crappy when other characters are introduced and it has to tie up the sort of genre devices very neatly. This movie is good in the beginning when it's playing with those your sort of preconceptions of the superhero genre. When it comes time for him to become reformed and step up and be the hero he needs to be, then it becomes sort of an everyday superhero movie, and it loses some of its character. That wasn't really the best written scene in the movie. There's some genuinely funny moments that come out of the dialogue, and Bateman's a funny actor. Charlize Theron is also in this. And Will Smith, I mean, there's a reason that he is arguably the biggest movie star in the world right now, and it's because he is very charming on screen. I think you can't really fault him for being a bad actor. You can fault him for not being very ambitious in the roles that he chooses.
Then again, that's what makes him a huge star.
Right.
And you know, movie stars, this is what they do. Does Jimmy Stewart, did he really stretch? Did Cary Grant really stretch that much? Did John Wayne? They're movie stars. They kind of play the same role over and over again.
Yeah, this is true. And if you're a guy like Will Smith, you know, why not just take batting practice for your whole career?
Yeah, why not? You get paid $20 million. All right, so let's move on to, that'd be a somewhat mediocre review. Let's move on to a movie set in 1994. We talked to the director on the show. The movie is called The Whackness. Do you want to give away why they call it The Whackness?
Yeah, I've seen it actually mentioned in some features I read already.
So the seal is broken.
The seal is broken.
Some great secret, but
no, it's not. It's actually a little cheesy. You know those points in movies where they have to like force the title into
like when he says they asked me for my John Hancock, like that.
Exactly. Yeah. Just like what we just listened to. Yeah, it's actually a scene between Olivia Thirlby and Josh Peck, who are the young actors who play sort of romantic couple in this film. And she tells him, you know what your problem is, Shapiro. I look at things and I see the dopeness. You only see the whackness. Wah, wah.
You know what, Kane? You're quite a citizen. That Lost Ark needs some raidering. Yeah, maybe the great movies don't have that scene. So what do you think of this film?
I actually like this film a lot. I saw it back in February at Sundance and then saw it again, I believe, last week. And it's when I first saw it and then again when I saw it the second time, I thought this is kind of the reverse side of the coin from Juno. It's a movie about kids. It's a coming-of-age story set with kids at that same kind of time. It's got a romantic element. It also has to do with the sort of relationship between kids who are isolated and older sort of mentoring people. It co-stars Olivia Thirlby, who played Juno McGuff's best friend in Juno.
Right.
The thing that is different about this movie is that there's no effort to make these children talk in this overly precocious, entertaining way. It's set in 1994 among sort of upper middle class white kids who live in Manhattan, but who listen to hip hop.
But not to put anyone off, if the upper middle class gets to you, the main character is actually kind of an, you know, he's dealing with the Olivia Thirlby character is a lot richer than he is.
Yeah, this
is
true.
He has economic uncertainty that drives the plot. He's got to sell drugs to make some money, maybe to save his dad's apartment. That sounds like that doesn't work, but it does work in the context of the movie. Here's what I thought didn't work, and we'll throw to a clip to define it. Luke is played by Josh Peck, this kid from Nickelodeon. He could be, you know, a very likable star. Ben Kingsley plays Dr. Squires, who is his friend and one of his customers for marijuana. Let's hear some interaction, then I'll tell you what I thought didn't work in this movie.
Around you, Luke, is this what you want for your mind, for your life? You want it to be like the city, sweep all the nasty bits under the rug, make everything okay?
Don't jump for the quick fix. Embrace your pain. Make it a part of you. You don't want to be like them. I don't want you to be like them.
So why are you never taking any of that stuff?
Jesus, Luke, I'm on all of it. I don't want you to be like me either.
I thought Ben Kingsley's performance was terrible accent. I could get past that, but it seemed like the accent drove everything. He seemed to be full of whackness or wackiness. He seemed unhinged every time he was on screen. I got distracted and just said to myself, what the hell is Gandhi doing?
See, that's weird. I had the opposite reaction to that performance. I felt like watching him, I very much believed this was a guy who's been taking drugs for the last 40
years.
Okay,
maybe I didn't consider the long-time cumulative effects of all the drugs, thus distorting his accent.
But, I mean, if you didn't get that, then that wasn't communicated clearly enough to you. I mean, I'm willing to concede that maybe that not everyone's going to get that out of the film, and maybe it should have been hammered.
But the good parts of the movie, the heart of the movie, the fact that this director, you know, will probably do interesting things. The smaller roles by big name people like Method Man and Mary-Kate Olsen, all very good.
Yeah. And Famke Janssen also. Yeah.
And Famke Janssen. And I think that Thurlby girl.
I think she's going to do good stuff.
I agree. All right, let's talk about a documentary called Gonzo, The Life and Work of Dr. Hunter S. Thompson. The director is
Alex Gibney. Enron, The Smartest Guys in the Room.
So that was an Academy Award nominated film. That was very much didactic, you know, yeah. I guess in a good way. If you didn't know anything about Enron, it's a good way to learn about it through his movie. What's his take on Dr. Hunter S. Thompson?
It's also a learning experience if, you know, if you're interested in Dr. Thompson, or if you, or you know, as someone who's already a fan, or somebody who is wanting to learn about him, it is basically a sort of blow by blow go through his life. Gibney gets in a lot of big name people. It's Jimmy Carter, Pat Buchanan, George McGovern, Graydon Carter, Jan Winner. It just kind of goes on and on. You have all these, you know, the people who are huge in shaping American life, and you know, since 1960.
All right, well, we have an example of that. In this clip, you will hear archival tape of Hunter S. Thompson giving his opinion of President Richard Nixon, followed by the movie's narrator, Johnny Depp, reading from Thompson's writings on Nixon. Let's listen.
Richard Nixon represents everything that I not only have contempt for, but dislike and think should be stomped out.
He was a cheap crook and a merciless war criminal who bombed more people to death in Laos and Cambodia than the U.S. Army lost in all of World War II. When students at Kent State University in Ohio protested the bombing, he connived to have them attacked and slain by troops from the National Guard. Some people will say that words like scum and rotten are wrong for objective journalism, which is true, but they miss the point. It was the built-in blind spots of the objective rules and dogma that allowed Nixon to slither into the White House in the first place.
All right, so there is Johnny Depp, who obviously took his role essentially as Hunter S. Thompson in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. You know, Raoul Duke was the Thompson stand-in. It seems like it works as history. How does it work as an entertaining movie?
Not terribly well. It plays a lot like a documentary you might see on the History Channel or something like that, which those shows serve their purpose, but I feel like you need a little more artistry out of a documentary that you're going to see in a theater, and I'm not getting that here. There are some really terrible, terrible scenes of reenactments of bits of Thompson's writing that are incredibly off-putting, considering that the rest of the film consists all entirely of this archival footage and these interviews. And it's just, there's a scene where a guy is reenacting a bit that Thompson wrote, describing Nixon as a werewolf jumping out of the White House.
No, what do we see? We don't see a werewolf jumping.
We see a werewolf
jumping. That's the problem with Enron, Smartest Guys in the Room. Someone would reference, you know, it was That Old Black Magic, and they throw to the song, That Old Black Magic.
Yeah.
I didn't see the film in between those two. I mean, maybe he made some shorts, but he was nominated for Taxi to the Dark Side. For an Oscar. Was that a good one? Did you see Gibney's Taxi to the Dark Side?
I actually liked Taxi a lot better than I liked this film.
That won the Academy Award.
Yeah, and he's involved in a dispute with his distributor now, actually. This compared to Taxi, it's not that I don't think the format, the sort of talking doc format can work. I just didn't feel like for instance, the reenacted pieces in Taxi are very well produced. In this film, they seem like they were produced on an incredibly short timetable, low budget, which most documentaries are, but this one somehow shorter and lower than.
And you,
for
of course,
most
you have the built-in excuse: "Hey, we're being Gonzo."
Yeah, and the film is a bit sycophantic. It is deifying Thompson in this way. I mean, you do hear about his bad behavior, but if it's not going to sway you in one direction or the other about his standing in the history of journalism.
Daniel Holloway, our movie guy and the movie reviewer for Metro Newspapers. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Bryant Park Project is directed by Jacob Gans and edited by Trish McKinney. Josh Rogerson's our technical director. Here's some of the staff: Dan Pashman, Ian Chillog, Wynn Rosenfeld, Lauren Sporer, Caitlin Kenny, Paul Heckinger, Zaina Barakat, Laura Silver, Molly Messick, and Mina Rema Murthy are our interns. Laura Conaway edits the blog. The sound of Jell-O is. Our newscaster is Matt Garrison. Our senior producer is Matt Martinez. Sharon Hoffman is our executive producer. I'm Mike Pesca. This is the Bryant Park Project from NPR News.